Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Welcome to the Hollywood Casino Press Box with your host, Frank Cusimano.
Here's the pitch. Line drive, there it is! Into left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored! Musial around first! On his way to second with a double!
The best interviews and the most informed insight.
Free has a seam and a crease. The kicker can't trip him up. Headed for the end zone. Will it be back-to-back weeks? Yes!
All tied together with the experience of over 20 years of local broadcasting excellence in St. Louis.
Now Stasny gets away from a check to Fabry. Wide open.
Now, here is Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Good morning and welcome. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you till 12 o'clock. Boy, we got a good one lined up today. Our good friend Mike Claiborne is going to join us 10:30 to talk some Cardinal baseball and Blues hockey. 11 o'clock, Martin will be here at 11:20. Kenny Rice from NBC on that Kentucky Derby controversy. Man, was that something else on Saturday afternoon. I have to make a confession. I feel like I'm cheating the audience today because normally if I do the monologue the night before late and I send it off to Brian, then in the morning what I try to do is, you know, get on the treadmill and watch as many programs as possible and read the paper thoroughly. Today I just got up. I said, you know, I'm just kind of sick of sports and I watch Billions. That was my show prep this morning. Billions. Are you a watcher, by the way? Because we share the same taste.
It's weird that I'm not, and I have the capability, obviously. So, and I'm looking for a show. So
the capability.
All of the points, you know, the time, you
yes,
know,
that's right.
Plenty of time. And I have the streaming service to do it. So I may actually start that sometime soon because I am looking for a show. Handmaid's Tale, few weeks away, though.
A few weeks away?
I do believe so, yes.
By the way, is that a feminine show? Are we one of a few men that watch this?
Look, it's a great storyline.
It's so powerful.
It's
so
great.
Dark and scary and... Oh, all right. What about the best thing you may have eaten this weekend? What would it have been?
Ooh, me and Madison went, and the dogs went camping. I guess it was quasi camping. We did this cabin, so it wasn't, you know, tent camping or anything.
So we're talking country food prepared for you?
We brought our own food to prepare ourselves, you know, and we had this pork tenderloin that we brought.
Ooh.
Cooked it for about an hour. It was unbelievable. Has some au gratin potatoes. Oh, it was phenomenal.
That sounds good. Brian?
Boy, you know, it wasn't very much an adventurous food weekend for me. We went to a bar Friday night to watch the Blues game, and that was kind of about it.
For me, Saturday, Dominic's, and I don't order anything complicated. When I go to a good Italian restaurant, I want to have their red sauce, their bolognese, and boy, that straight bolognese sauce. Oh, gosh, is that good stuff. All right. Our opening monologue is brought to you by the great people at Worldwide Technology Raceway. And let's begin with lap one. You know, the only thing that I really felt strongly about in this series was it going seven games. And that's what we have now.
In honor of Jack Buck, who is the St. Louis Blues play-by-play announcer, their first two seasons, 67-68 and 68-69, we will see you Tuesday night.
Very well done, Kenny Albert. I know a lot of people have problems with that broadcast. Kenny Albert's a pro. And please, for the people who think he's anti-blue, you're absolutely wrong. It's just crazy. Costas used to say that, or maybe it was Joe Buck, that if half of the hate mail he gets is from one city and half of the hate mail he gets is from the other city, that means he knows he's done a good job. So how did they get there? You know, a good start was really imperative for the Blues. I'm not sure. I know they had that epic comeback in Winnipeg, but somehow yesterday I thought that if you went down 1-0 or 2-0, well, this series would have been over. Alex Pietrangelo made sure they got the lead.
Shin with Schwartz and Tarasenko, they played together in the third period in Game 5. Pietrangelo with time, shoots, scores! Just 63 seconds in.
How about the amount of traffic, guys, in front of Ben Bishop? And it wasn't just the Blues in front of it. It was the Stars. That has got to be the craziest and the toughest thing to do when you got three guys in front of you and you're trying to stop a puck that may be going 100 miles an hour. But the play that everybody is talking about is goal number three.
Now, Parayko with a shot. That knocks down Bishop. He lost the stick. He's down, and the Blues score!
Get an explanation on their third goal with Bishop when he was down there?
Well, that's a discretionary call on the ref if they think there's an injury there. You know, and how significant is it?
Did you have and how is Bishop now? Do you have an update for us at all?
He's fine. Stayed in the game. He's fine. We just want to put Dobie in. He wasn't hurt. That's why we switched.
What do you think, guys? I mean, it looked like he was shot. You think he? I know he's going to go out there and play, but I wonder how healthy he could be after that.
Oh boy. Am I reading too much into it? Thinking it's curious. He didn't speak after the game. Bishop didn't. He wasn't made available.
I mean, he'll obviously play, barring a broken, anything broken. But he stayed in the game. It's going to be tough, and I think you got to utilize that side of the net next time you come out and play.
You just have to go to the right side.
You just
100%.
Have Parayko shoot bullets all game.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in just a moment. And I know some people thought that Ben did some acting on the David Perron slash earlier in the series, but that was a blow. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're 6'7 or 5'7. That cannon just has to knock you out.
I wonder, is that a little bit of an unexposed area for goalie pads, that collarbone? Just to allow your shoulders some freedom of movement. I was wondering that yesterday watching it. If there's like one itty bitty spot that's exposed, and if the puck just got it.
Yeah.
And if it did, how is it not a broken collarbone? Like,
right.
95 mile an hour slap shot hitting bone. You would have to think if it did, there's got to be some sort of break in there at some point, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Lap two. How about the coach, Craig Berube? He wakes up with an idea. Let's play the guy who hasn't played in 2 months. Let's play the guy who's never played in a playoff game in his life. The guy who really you haven't even mentioned his name. Let's start him. And how did that work out for Sammy Blais?
Continuing along with it is Ben, taken away by O'Reilly, and now a breakaway for Sammy Blais. Tees one up and scores!
I mean, he's got some balls. I think you can tell the way. I know you don't like to hear this word, but I didn't think of anything else. Sorry, I'm French. And I just think that he kind of wears his emotion. He wears his pride. And honestly, you can see, like, he's got so much pride, so much passion into everything that he does. And he's so fun to play for. And he made a big decision, and it worked out.
Yeah, actually, we do like that word, David. Yeah. That's the perfect word to describe this. That's unbelievable. And did you guys watch during the game when he was, he had his arm around Vladimir Tarasenko on the bench and was trying to push him along too? He's something else. He's coming back. You know, I thought, well, first of all, Quenneville's out of the picture. But when you won a series and now you got this 1-7, yeah, he's definitely coming back. Lap three. So we do have a game seven. Stars are 5-7 in game sevens, and the Blues are 8-8. None of this means anything. Most of those guys didn't play any of those game sevens. I think you can take the attitude that the Stars had their chance to put them away, and now it's back home with all the momentum for the Blues. But I think if you take that attitude, you'd probably be wrong. Dallas proves they can win here. They just did win here. It just could come down to a puck taking a bad bounce, squirting the wrong way. It could come down to a defensive-oriented defenseman to score a goal in overtime a la Barrett Jackman, something really unexpected. But in the end, I think it's likely going to come down to one of the goalies being slightly more locked in for 60 minutes. And I wouldn't bet against our guy. He only had 22 saves yesterday. But he was fine. He was good. But then again, what happens every time Ben Bishop lets in a few goals? What happens the next game? Ben Bishop turns into Ken Dryden. This one is too close to call. It really is. If they lose, it's going to be gut-wrenching. And I'd like to get your guys' opinion on this, Plowsy and Brian. If they lose, it's going to be gut-wrenching because it's a Game 7. But I kind of like their future win or lose. I know you may never be in this situation again. You got to win. You got to get to the conference final. But still, I like the future because they got the goaltender and so many players in their primes or approaching their primes. Kind of reaction, guys.
I was thinking after Ben Bishop went down, the Blues took their 4-1 lead. They got Bishop out of the game. And my first thought was, assuming Bishop had a significant injury like a broken collarbone, that the most Blues thing imaginable would be Q Dobin shutting him out in Game 7.
Isn't that a St. Louis thing where a Cardinal yeah. get a random lefty and then just like, he goes 7
that
strong?
Is a wet
you, you would just go in there with all the positive attitude in the world, thinking you got it, you're at home, you knocked out Ben Bishop, who had stymied you throughout significant portions, including Game 5 at home. And just, if Q Dobin, the guy who you knocked around the last time you played in the postseason a couple years ago, just has the game of his life. I hope it doesn't happen, but I was thinking that would be emblematic of the franchise.
Wow. That is so dark, but it's provocative.
I mean, I like the take. I'm a wet blanket, too. I do like the take. I think this is a great season if this series ends with Dallas winning Game 7, even in St. Louis. Because of where you were in January. I understand that before the season, you're supposed to make this deep run like they are now. But when you're talking, you're sitting there in January, talking about trading Pietrangelo and Berube's not the guy and things like that. And now you're looking at one win away from a Western Conference Finals appearance. It's unbelievable. So as desperate as the fan base is in St. Louis for a cup, I think this is a great year nonetheless.
Now, a lot of people are texting in as you're saying that. I'm tired of excuses. They got to win. You know, that's what they're saying right now. That's what they're texting in right now.
Yeah.
They're ticked off. It's got to be right now. They have to win. And, those people have a legitimate point, too. We've waited long enough.
I think the biggest disappointment would be, and I really hope they win on Tuesday, because if they lose, I think the story is going to be just how wide open everything was for them. Tampa was out. Calgary was out. You're facing a San Jose or a Colorado team who you feel like you match up well enough against in the next round. Out east, it's Boston and who else? It just seemed like if there ever were an open year for a team that got hot at the right time to run through and take it, it would be this year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'll tell you what, though, that San Jose team.
They're good.
Yeah, and you know what's amazing about them? I watched a game the other night. Is this Martin Jones was, like, terrible. He had, a 880 or 890 save percentage. He was terrible during the regular season. And now he's turning into Martin Brodeur. I mean, hockey is so crazy. You just got to get a little mojo going, and everything changes. All right, lap four. Cubs and Cardinals. You know, let me just say this right off the bat. I would not trade Paul Goldschmidt for Anthony Rizzo. No chance. I mean, career stats, career slash line, 296, 396, 530 for our guy. And Rizzo, 269, 369, 486. That's not a minor difference. That's a pretty significant difference. Goldie has more home runs, more RBIs. He's a better fielder. However, in this series, this is the big series of the season so far. One all-star first baseman had 7 RBIs, and the other had 0. Even last night, when Rizzo goes just 1-for-5, he had the big blow off Adam Wainwright.
Gapper, and that's going to roll right past Martinez and clear the bases. Zobrist and Bryan score, and just like that, the Cubs have their 3-run lead back.
And I got to tell you too, Bryan, look, I like Mike Schilt a lot. And if you want to start Wainwright in that sixth inning, maybe, you don't have Wainwright with his splits against lefties pitching to Anthony Rizzo in that situation. That was a bad move by the manager.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's available on a day-to-day basis, but you do have two lefties who you like, and Ty Webb and Andrew Miller, and you have relievers who you really like to get that out. That was a miss by Schilt.
Yeah. Woo. That was terrible. All right. Lost weekend in Wrigley. 4 losses in a row. They've gone, this is kind of odd, they've gone from the best record in baseball on Wednesday night to the second best record in the National League Central on Sunday night. And then Chris Bryant got the last laugh, too, with that bombastic blast. Cardinal thoughts, come on aboard. Lost weekend in Chicago. All right, left five. A couple of quick NBA thoughts. The association is so crazy good. I don't know if you saw Kawhi Leonard, 39-14, and he does it shooting 60% from the field. Somebody compared him to Kobe. No, no, he's not Kobe. He's so humble, and he actually will pass the ball. And he joined Shaq as the only players in the league to get to 150 in four playoff games in a series while shooting 60%. You know what the only difference is? Shaq just dunks. Kawhi is hitting step-back threes. Shaq is shooting no-footers. I mean, this guy is just insane. He's the second-best player in the world as we speak after Kevin Durant. And boy, isn't it nice, I don't know if you saw any of this, to see Seth Curry, not Steph Curry, have a game like he did. He had a 14-point quarter, a 16-point game. Imagine what it's like being his brother, Steph Curry's brother, and you do the same thing. Be like, I'd like to be George Clooney's brother. Oh, what do you do?
You live off of the scraps is what you do.
Yeah. It would be tough, though, to be in the same profession as the greatest shooter of all time, and that's what you do. And you've been kind of a part-time player. But, boy, he looked really good last night. In fact, he's the best shooting Curry in this postseason so far. The Nuggets. You know, I've always felt like I should never root for them because they're owned by Stan Kroenke. But if you have not seen this Jokic, he's the best center in the world. He really is.
And he is the least-looking NBA player.
Oh, my goodness.
In the league.
Not a hint of muscle. Doesn't jump.
Good.
Oh, so he's had back-to-back triple-doubles. He's had 11 NBA playoff games, and he's averaging almost a triple-double.
And he legitimately looks like he's never lifted a weight in his life. Yeah. He's just got all this flab. How about that Portland-Denver series in general?
It's good. Yeah,
that's been
really
great.
And Denver has a legit duo. I mean, Jamal Murray is a superstar in the making.
My goodness.
I mean, he
Did
is going to be lights
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
He is unbelievable talent.
Celtics regretting they had the chance to take him, and they took Jaylen Brown, who's a fine player, but he's not He's not Murray. But I'm wondering, what center could get like back-to-back triple-doubles in NBA history? Now, Wilt, at the end of his career, when he decided to pass the ball, could do that. And I think Hakeem had a game like that. He almost had a quadruple-double once. But, gosh, for a center, a true seven-footer to average a triple-double, that's crazy. All right, lap six. The Kentucky Derby. There have been 145 of them, but never won like on Saturday.
Maximum Security, Country House, 1-2 down to the line. Maximum Security wins the Kentucky Derby.
He did come out at the top of the stretch, nearing the top of the stretch. He impeded the one horse, War of Will. Mm-hmm.
Maximum Security moved out of lane before he was clear, forcing the rider of number one, War of Will, to check up a little bit. But you could tell by the reaction of Tyler Gaffleon on War of Will that there was definitely some contact. They disqualified him.
They did. So for the first time in the history of the Kentucky Derby, the horse that crossed the line first has been disqualified. After the objection, Country House wins the Kentucky Derby.
So it is in the rule book, the words swerves. And he did swerve. It's really crazy when you think about it, fellas, that like the two most significant sporting events of the spring, the NCAA National Championship game on the men's side and the Kentucky Derby, are decided by officials. And technically, the officials were correct in what they did. Thoughts?
I guess I don't follow horse racing as much. When I watched the video, it didn't look egregious. I kind of thought that that's kind of was the name of the game and trying to get ahead of people at all costs. So I wasn't for sure about the rules. I was shocked, though, about the disqualification. In an event like that, you usually don't see that, Frank. But, again, not a huge horse guy, but was still we'll remember this for a long time.
I don't know if you heard this one, too, Brian. You know, who was the guy that made a bet? What was the crazy bet that he made an ungodly sum of money? Was it the NCAA tournament betting on? No, it couldn't have been on Virginia. There was some guy who went to Vegas and he made some great bet and he won like an obscene amount of money.
Oh. I don't know.
What? Oh, yeah. And then did he bet Virginia to win it?
No, didn't he bet Texas Tech to win it and then hedged it or something? Or
he didn't hedge it, though, yeah.
Yeah, he ended up taking that and riding with it.
But he put down a crazy amount of money to win that absurd amount of money. Of course, he didn't end up.
He put $1,500 and would have won $300,000.
Okay. $1,500 is a lot of money to bet.
Yes.
How about this guy? Got this morning. This gentleman bet $8. And he came away with $78,000.
Dang. It's because of the disqualification?
Yeah. The unidentified gambler, a regular at the Mirage, who watched the big race with his mother, won in a big way with two identical $4 superfectas that paid $51,000 each, or $39,500 minus taxes, after a 65-1 long shot. Country House was moved to first place.
Someone I know was with someone for the Derby, and he won the exacta and trifecta because of the disqualification and came away with $150,000 on Saturday.
Wait a minute. Let's say this again.
He hit the exacta and the trifecta, so he got 1-2 and 1-2-3 right because of the DQ and came away with $150,000.
What did he bet?
I don't know how much he bet, actually.
This is a buddy of yours?
A friend of mine who knows someone who did this.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Do you know if he did it at Fairmont locally? Or?
That's a good question.
$150,000.
In fact, Brian, that's a TV story. I'd get that guy on camera if he's a St. Louis. And of course, I don't know if he wants to go public with that money, but that's awesome.
Brian, one of your questions. So, you ever wanted to give me away some money, let me know.
All right, we'll take a short time out. When we come back, we'll chat with Mike Claiborne. I do want to say, if you want to be a part of the program, Maryville University sponsors our phone lines. Each new student is assigned a life coach who's a knowledgeable resource for academic advising, mentoring, campus networking, career guidance, and all things Maryville. We'll take a break. We're coming right back.